Good morning, everybody. I hope you're enjoying the conference so far. I was actually asked to moderate this panel on defining success on your own terms, right when I really started thinking about the question myself. I was out to dinner with an old law school friend, and I had left the corporate law world, and I was doing personal development writing and speaking at the time. And I shared with my friend this little fantasy I had of moving out to the countryside to write my book and just soak in some quiet and just slow down so I could open up. And without hesitation, my friend turned to me and said, "You can't go out to the countryside. You can't drag your husband, who's a corporate attorney, out to the country. He's ambitious and he wants to be successful." What? As if I'm not ambitious? As if I don't want to be successful? My first thought was, this book of mine better become a New York Times bestseller so I can show this guy who's ambitious and who's successful. And my second thought was, is success really a New York Times bestseller? Is it really my husband's fancy corporate law job? So I went home, I wrote a version of this story for Forbes, forwarded it to my friend and all of our mutual friends, and of course my friend sincerely apologized. But since then, I've been really thinking about what it means to define success on my own terms and how to have the courage to do that and to go for it once I do. So I'm really excited to be here to talk with these wonderful panelists about what success means to them and how we can all define it on our own terms. So let me first explain how this session's going to work. I'm going to start by asking each of these wonderful panelists to briefly introduce themselves, and then I'm going to ask them each some questions. And then I will reserve some time at the end, so if you have some questions, you can ask them too, and we have a mic set up here. So collect your questions throughout the session, and you'll get a chance to get them answered. So, Shalice, would you begin?
I am Shalice Manza-Young. I am the Patriots beat writer for the Boston Globe. My name's Shalice Manza-Young. I am the New England Patriots beat writer for the Boston Globe, which means that football is involved in my life somehow about 350 days of the year. The rest of the time when I'm not doing that, I also am a mom, and in the springtime I find my sanity by coaching track at a local girls' school.
Oh, thank you. Okay.
Can you hear me? Can you hear me? All right. My name is Ella Bell. I'm a professor at the Tuck School of Business at Dartmouth. And when I am not teaching MBA students, I work with young women in a program called Career GPS. Oh, sorry. In a program called Ascent, Leading Multicultural Women to the Top, which is a leadership development for women just like you in the audience.
I'm Lauren Berger. I'm known as the intern queen. I'm a career and internship and workplace, everything at work sort of expert. I do focus on working with millennials. I run internqueen.com, which is a free internship website. Do we have college students in the audience? If you're in college, if you're a parent of somebody in college, and if you know anyone in college, okay. So internqueen.com is a free internship website, and employers, if you're looking for interns, I have a lot of them. But I've been running this company full-time since 2009 when I kind of came up with the idea that I would be the intern queen and sort of personally connect with students about their internship and career paths after college. So I speak around the country at about 40 schools every year. I get them pumped up, young people pumped up about their future, and then I write and blog for, you know, AOL Jobs and the Huffington Post and everybody out there. And that's what I do. And, you know, the most important thing here is that if I can be the intern queen, I mean, really, the intern queen? Yeah. If I can do this, then each one of you in the room can really do anything you set out to do.
My name is Mark McKinnon. My most recent professional iteration is that I am a fellow at the Institute of Politics at the Kennedy School. Also, I recently, a couple years ago, co-founded an organization called No Labels, which is about a 500,000-strong grassroots organization dedicated to civil dialogue and bipartisanship and problem-solving in Congress. I also write a weekly column for the Daily Beast and the London Telegraph. I spent 30 years of my life in politics and public policy and campaigns, running the media and advertising for campaigns for diverse characters such as George W. Bush and Ann Richards, I also started a company called Public Strategies, which recently merged with the oldest PR firm in the world called Hill & Knowlton. And I started off as a songwriter and failed spectacularly.
Thank you. So I want to start our conversation with the core question here, which is how do we define success and how do we define it on our own terms? A couple months ago, I was at the Omega Institute's Women in Power Conference, and I was there with these amazingly successful women. And from the outside, they looked like they had achieved like the highest heights in their fields. But over the course of a weekend, as I was talking to these women, I was hearing stories like they were just waiting for the next thing to happen, their next achievement to feel successful. But from the outside, they had made it. But on the inside, success looked very different. And so, Mark, I was hoping you would start our conversation. What does success mean to you, and how do we define it on our own terms?
Thanks. I think that's the fundamental question. I even thought a little bit about the name of the panel, which is defining or finding success. And you know, really, to me, the question is, it should be about finding and defining happiness, because I just want to tell one brief anecdote, if I can, because it's pretty instrumental to my life and how I've lived it, which is the mentorship and guidance of my uncle, who was a great character, who was a black sheep growing up like I was, got in a lot of trouble, ended up in the Army Mountain Ski Division, and then kind of disappeared for a few years into Europe, and then we started seeing him show up in James Bond movies. He was a stunt skier and a stunt motorcycle driver, and then he started showing up in Canadian Club ads at the top of the Alps, drinking Canadian Club. And then he came back to America, and he went to work for IBM. And almost overnight, he became the number one salesman for IBM in the country and became fabulously successful. And next thing we knew, he had married a woman from Paris. He had two or three homes, about five cars. And then one day he woke up and he said, "This is not fulfilling. It's not rewarding at all, and it's not bringing me any enrichment or happiness in my life." He quit his job, sold his cars and his houses, divorced his wife, and he moved to Vermont, where he's been living for about the last 40 years. He married an artist, and he lives on maybe $500 a month, and he's the happiest guy I know in the universe. Throughout my life, his counsel to me has always been, when you are making decisions and you're thinking about big, important forks in the road, often if it's comfortable, it's wrong. So, and his point was that it's often easy to sort of check off to the easier thing, the more comfortable thing, but that's not where you learn. That's not where you grow. And that's not where you find new experience, meet new people. So I've taken that to heart at several sort of distinct times in my life, and I've found it to be, something to really think about when you're making these big decisions.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that story. I love it. I sometimes think that the scariest things make you the happiest, bring you the most happiness. So one of the themes of this session is the changing meaning of success for Gen Y. You know, if you're in Gen Y, you see your parents, they had this very linear path. Their trajectory was pretty clear, A to B to C, and that's kind of how it went. But for us, there really isn't one way. We're kind of on this zigzag. Lauren, can you talk about how our generation has redefined success and how your own professional choices have reflected that?
Sure. I think that there's new rules at work today. I mean, the rules are just simply not the same. And I often find myself telling, you know, my friends and my peers and even my parents' friends that you have to change. I mean, when I was in school, which was not very long ago, I'm 28, but have my 10-year high school reunion this year. But in school, it was always be quiet, you know, respect the situation, never come across like you have a sense of entitlement, and stay in line. Stay in line. And I think that's flawed immensely, especially today. I would not be where I am today. I would not be able to have supported myself and run my own business that's, you know, growing substantially for 4 years now without taking initiative and constantly stepping up to the plate. And I really think it's a matter of recognizing what it is that you want to do and then telling somebody. When I look at my college career, when I was interning at a ton of different places, you know, my first job out of college and then my transition from corporate into entrepreneurship, it was every step of the way I got where I was because I told someone what I wanted to do. No matter if they wanted to hear it or not, I would tell one person and then I would tell another person. I would set informational meetings with successful people that were doing things similar to what I wanted to do, and I wouldn't stop until I made a change. So I really think with, you know, what Gen Y is going to have to do, and I think what everyone's going to have to do a little bit more going into 2013 is to not be afraid and to make some noise.
I love it. So I think we have to flip this around because I don't think you can talk about success without talking about failure. If you've read the stories of any of the most successful people, you read the stories of failure after failure after failure. So Ella, I'm going to ask you, can you talk about a time we were in the speaker's lounge? She's like, why did you ask me this question?
I know.
Can you talk about a time when you faced a failure and how you overcame it?
Which one? Because there have been multiple ones, both on the personal side and the professional side. You know, divorced, laid off twice. But I've got to respond, because I'm feeling old sitting next to Lauren. For women, the path is never clear. There's no easy path. There wasn't an easy path. I'm 63. There's no easy path, okay? So if you think there's an easy path, there is none. And the other part of this is, I think at times we think failure is at work or failure is when I'm not leading up to my best self. 2005, I was trying to start a new organization called Ascent. It was a leadership development for women. We were out trying to get corporate funds. I had to write a proposal to get the money to get this thing running. We were all on board, and everything was fine, and I went to go buy peaches at my local farmer's market and got hit by a truck. I give you this example to share with you that sometimes failure is so far beyond your control and it's an ordinary day and everything is going just wonderfully well and bam, out of nowhere, the game changes. And we often, you know, blame ourselves for our failures. Guess what? A lot of the failures that we experience, it's not about us. This was not about me. This was about a 16-year-old driving her uncle's pickup truck without a license who didn't see a cute little colored lady crossing the street, okay, in a rural area, okay? And I went up in the air, landed on my face, lost 5 teeth, broke my arm, was unconscious for 16 hours. Shouldn't really be here. Should not be here, okay? It took a little while to pick myself back up. And I think the main thing out of that failure is that what it gave me was determination beyond the call. Responding to failure means that you've got to pick your, and I literally had to pick myself back up. I had a cerebral hematoma. They were considering brain surgery. I mean, it went on and on. They were trying to tell me about, you know, you're going to be handicapped the rest of your life. And I was sitting there going, no, not really. And I was in my 50s. You know, it's like, that's not me. You have to recognize that failure are about major, major lessons that can tell you what you are so capable of. And we forget that. It's about how you pick yourself back up. It is about you can do this. It is about determination. And it is about faith. Because if I ever did believe that there was something bigger and better out there than me, that experience taught me that God was there, alive. And I'm not trying to turn this into a Christian event, by no means. But the reality of it is that you've got to believe that there's something bigger and better out there than you that's got your back. Okay? So that's we wrote the proposal. I found support. You don't do it by yourself. People rallied around. We got the proposal done, and Ascent has been running now successfully for 6 years. So, you know, you can do this.
You're awesome, Ella.
Did I handle that right?
You're great.
Hard right next to her, boy. Woo.
It's a love fest. So when
it is.
It is. When you're starting to succeed, I think a lot of people, at least I get this feeling, that when people really start seeing me as a success, I kind of feel like I'm posing, like I'm some sort of fraud. Like everyone sees me as a successful person, but I'm like not as good or as successful or smart as everyone seems to think I am. Has anyone ever experienced this? Yeah, I'm seeing nods. Okay, that's good. I'm not alone. Shalice, have you ever experienced this? It's called imposter syndrome. Like, I didn't just make this up. Have you ever experienced that? And what can we do? Because it seems like there's a lot of people here who have.
I don't know if it's an ever thing. I think it's an always thing
for
me. Even when I got the emails to participate in this conference, I basically blew off the first two because I was like, there's no way that they want me to come speak. And now, professor, entrepreneur, worked with presidents, and I cover a football team, so.
And you rock. You rock.
Wow.
I want your autograph.
So, you know, I think the imposter thing, it comes up for me quite a bit because I am a woman. I'm a minority woman. I'm half Italian and I'm half black. And, excuse me, it's just men don't like it. Men do not like that a woman covers football. And a lot of times they will say to me, well, you didn't play, so what do you know? Well, what they fail to realize is that just because the other reporters have a penis, that doesn't mean that they played football either. It just means that they, you know, maybe they grew up watching it with their father more than I did, but it doesn't mean that they played football any more than I did. So that's one of the things that I always have to deal with. It's been a struggle. I started as a sports writer basically right out of college. Actually, when I was in college, I became part of this great program at the Providence Journal. And then in 2006, basically by accident, the Patriots beat at the Providence Journal came open. They couldn't hire anybody else. I was the only person who had been around the team other than the person who left. And they looked at me and said, do you want to do it? And I said, sure. I had no idea what I was getting myself into. Not a clue. So every day since then has been a complete learning experience. And it's finding out how I want to cover a beat, finding out the best way to cover a beat and adapting it to the way that I want to do it, because of course everybody has strengths and weaknesses and how they will approach something. So, you know, sometimes there is that imposter thing, and not necessarily because I don't feel like I do my job. It's people don't understand everything that goes into my job, and they think that all my job should be is X's and O's, and I understand what a two gap is versus, you know, a three gap and cover three versus cover two. My job is so much more than that. And when I think about it and the times I get emails saying that, you know, I was just an affirmative action hire or that, you know, I should be writing for Ladies Home Journal instead of the Providence Journal, which the joke is on that guy because I can only cook about two things. when I get those emails, for a long time they would bother me and it would be, well, are they right? Or what's the basis of this? And because of my husband, and more recently because of my therapist, then I have figured out that a lot of times those things come from a place of jealousy from those people because they want to do what I do. You know, they're boys who grew up here in Boston reading Will McDonough, who was like the godfather of NFL reporting, or was when he was with us. And they read Will McDonough every Sunday. And they were like, oh, I want to do that when I grow up. And here's little old me that has the job that they all want. So, you know, I have felt it, the imposter thing. But I think it's just looking back at myself and realizing that I literally have worked my butt off for over 6 years to gain people's respect. And a lot of people do respect me, whether I'm a woman or not.
Yeah, thank you. So I'd love to ask each of the panelists to share their ideas about how we can actually start applying some of the wisdom that they're sharing here. I've been in your seat, and I know how it feels to listen to a panel of people talking, and they're all super successful, and they've made it, and it's like, well, how do I actually do this? How do I define success on my own terms? There's this huge disconnect between what I could feel success is and what my parents are telling me success is, or what society is telling me success is. So I was hoping, Mark, maybe you would start off. What are some like practical exercises or tips that you can offer for how we can all start defining success on our own terms?
Great, thanks. Shalice, let me just give you a big respect on what you do. I was Googling last week, cover two, still trying to figure out what it means. So, and you're right about the incredible world in which you work. So it's a testament to the fact that you have that beat job in one of the most important franchises in NFL in America. So congratulations.
Thank you.
We get down to, you know, what is success, what is happiness, and I think that, again, when I think about the core of what's made me happy, or I look at others at what makes them happy or successful, it often gets down to passion, and you know, it's really sort of a core notion of what do you care about, what gets you excited, what do you want to get up for in the morning, and just as you asked about tips, and I just say that. The one thing that I've found over the course of my professional career, which has been not by design at all, I've done a lot of different things, but most of it has been by accident, but it's always been by through my passion. As I mentioned earlier, I started off as a songwriter. I ran away from home in the middle of high school and hitchhiked to Nashville and spent about 5 years knocking around there and had a great time. I ended up came out to play at a folk festival in Texas and ended up in Austin, Texas, did it for a while. But then there was a point at which, even though this is something I dedicated my entire life to, I mean, even though I was fairly young at the time, but it's all I ever imagined doing. I couldn't imagine ever doing anything. I was an absolutely dedicated soldier to the Army of the Arts. And then I looked around and I realized that on the arc that I was on and tracking it, that, you know, I was going to end up as the second act at the Cambridge Holiday Inn when I was 50 years old, and that there were a lot of people around me who were a lot better than I was, and I had to acknowledge that. So, you know, that was one of the times in my life where I think I really exercised some wisdom by just applying some practical reality to the situation, the competitive environment that I was in. But so I tried a little higher education. My passion was still writing, though, so I found an outlet through the school newspaper and became the editor of the school newspaper. And my other passion was politics, so I loved to write about politics, so I wrote a lot about politics. And then somebody that I covered ran for the U.S. Senate, and I said, well, that would be fun to kind of find out about how that works. So I volunteered, and I just showed up and said, I'll do anything that you'll let me do. And a couple of weeks later, a sign went up, and so they let me volunteer, of course. It was me and a bunch of, you know, 70-year-old geriatrics licking envelopes. But I was happy to do that. And then a couple of weeks later, a sign went up that said, we're looking for somebody to just do data input for $5 an hour. And I said, God, I'd love to do that. That's, you know, more money than I've ever made. So I got to do that. And then several weeks after that, somebody kind of came down from the third floor and said, oh, that's, you know, you used to work at the college newspaper. You should be doing press upstairs. So the next thing I know, I'm doing press for the campaign. And we had a very exciting primary and won it, but then lost in the general election. And that's when I figured my political career was over. And that's when I discovered you can fail upwards in politics. And I got a call from the governor's office and then went over to the governor's office. And then I fell in love with the media advertising side, and that's kind of how it all kind of clicked together. But I suppose all of those intersections, the thing that it had in common was, even if I failed, back to your failure question, I found a way to sort of acknowledge that but I still have a passion for writing or whatever it might be. I just need to find another place to see where it works.
Great. Thank you. Lauren, do you want to share some exercises or tips?
Sure. I'm thinking of a couple different things. I think, well, how many people want to start their own businesses, or maybe that's something in the back of their head? Is that okay? So when I had a full-time job, I was working at Creative Artist Agency, biggest talent agency in the world in Beverly Hills, California, and it was the coolest job on the planet. I mean, my parents thought that me wanting to leave and go be the intern queen was insane because we represented every movie star on the planet. Why would I want to leave that life? My boss had a mansion in the hills. Why would I not want to be that person? I didn't want to be a talent agent. I wanted to be the intern queen and help college kids. Not the cool thing when you're working at CAA. But, you know, in my spare time, which was not a lot, I was the second assistant to the head of motion picture talent at Creative Artist Agency. I was working from 7 in the morning until 1 in the morning, maybe. I would have no time for lunch. But I still found time to work on my intern queen idea, whether it was getting up at 5 a.m. and putting in 2 hours, whether it was, you know, putting in 30 minutes during the day when I could on the weekends. I mean, I would try at every moment I got to work on the business so that when I did have that opportunity, I had something there. When I finally went out and started my own business, I already had somewhat of a following because I'd created my website. I'd had it for about, I had my website up in 2006, and I didn't start my company full-time until 2009. So there was definitely some lag time there where I'd built up a little bit of a following, a lot of great content. I mean, it doesn't take days and days to write a blog. Everybody can do it today. Everyone can put up those social media channels. But start now. You don't have to quit your job to start your own business, so start thinking about what you can do now. And then, like I said before, you know, telling people what you want to do. A quick example. I wanted to work with Intel, okay, the computer. We've heard of Intel, the computer chip company. This is like Lauren Berger intern queen style. So I want to work with Intel. So I tell my parents, yeah, I want to work with Intel. My dad's like, good luck with that, Laura. I'm like, all right, Dad, I'm going to try. So I go on LinkedIn. And I typed in Intel, okay? I filtered my search. I typed in marketing. So, like, 5 people's names come up. The top guy's name was, like, Benny Sampson, okay? So this is a fake name. I've thought about this. I could get in trouble. So let's say his name's Benny Sampson. So his name's Benny Sampson. I put that into Google and I put Intel email address. Well, they tell me that Benny's email is benny.sampson@intel.com. So I email Benny, my new friend, right? I say, hi, Benny, I'm Lauren Berger. This is what I have going on. I noticed that you're doing a lot of campaigns with your tablet and Ultrabook products that are catered towards young people and Gen Y. I'd love to work with you. Of course, Benny doesn't email me back because why would he? So 2 weeks later, I follow up because if you don't follow up, you are ruining everything for yourself. You have to follow up with people. Every 10 days, you send a follow-up email, okay? I use the 3 strikes and you're out rule, the old ball game, okay? So until you follow up 3 times, you are not done. So I followed up with Benny 10 days later. Don't hear back from Benny. Follow up with Benny again 10 days after that. Benny writes back. He says, Lauren, typically I delete these emails, but yours caught my eye. Let's get on the phone. Okay? This is, by the way, my first email to Benny was July 18th. This is this year, 2012. So we get on the phone. So this is now like 30 days after original email. I talk to Benny. Benny says, you know, asks me all these questions about how I use technology in my life as a young entrepreneur, yada, yada, yada. We have this great call a couple weeks later, still haven't heard from Benny. So what did I do? I followed up because we're all going to follow up after this this conference on everything. So I follow up with Benny. I said, Benny, we had a great call a few weeks ago. I wanted to follow up. He said, Lauren, that's funny. You emailed me. I'm talking about you in a meeting right now. He said, I have an offer for you. He said, we have an offer for you, a contract for you to come and speak at an Intel product launch event in September. We've never had a young person keynote a product launch. Usually it's the GM of Intel, you know, kind of boring, talking about the different products, how they work. He said, why don't you come and tell everybody how millennials use technology? We'll hire you to be the keynote. Does that sound good? Okay. So September 28th, I was in San Francisco at the Museum of Modern Art at the Intel product launch, and I was telling, you know, all of these 40-year-old men how millennials use technology. So it just goes to show that you can put yourself out there, tell people what you want to do, use LinkedIn, it is a great tool, and, you know, it's not always going to work, trust me, there's a lot of Bennies that I've reached out to in the world, but sometimes it does, so it is worth putting yourself out there.
I love it. Energy, okay, tons of energy is a good example. Know yourself. You're good, you're bad, and you're ugly. You know, the good parts of you that, you know, always you feel good about, people have always told you about, you know what you're good, your strengths. Know the bad parts, those sexy parts that you know you need to change, you know, your New Year's resolutions, but that somehow you hang on to because it's your sexy, and then know you're ugly. Know those parts of yourselves that really hurt, that cause you shame, embarrassment, humiliation. Why? Because that's where your strengths are. That's where your gifts are. Know yourself. That's critically, critically important. And don't be someone that you're not. You can't have success if you're not true to who you are. You know, if you're trying to have success the way somebody else is trying to have it, then guess what? You're not going to be happy. Question this thing about happiness. To me, happiness comes and goes. And if we're not happy, sometimes we walk away from something. Success might not be for me defined as happiness. It's for me what's making a difference. How am I making a difference? How am I reaching and touching other people? How are they being able to grow? Because I'm a teacher, how are they able to grow based on what I'm facilitating? All right? That's not necessarily happiness. But it does make me feel like I'm having purpose. Take risks. I remember when I got the idea to do a not-for-profit organization. I'm an academic. I went to my dean at Tuck and I said, you know, I've got this little idea. I really want to do it. I think it's my calling. And he looked at me and said, okay, now many deans of top business schools would have said, that's very nice, you know, I guess you'll be leaving to do this incentive, right? Luckily, my dean said, I don't care what you do as long as you do it here, but I had to have the risk, the courage to be able to broach something new. Sometimes we're not willing to let go. You've got to let go for something new to happen. And you can't do it by yourself. You've got to have people around you. And I think we've all talked about that. You know, who's your posse? Your kitchen cabinet? Where's your team? Those people that you can talk to, those people who are going to tell you, this sounds great, or, you know, girlfriend, you need to think about this some more, and or you know, have you thought about? That's really important, because sometimes we think success is defined by how much work I do. I'm just going to put my head down. I'm going to work like a dog. If you don't have relationship, then success is not going to happen. You've got to have performance with success. You've got to have dream with relationship. Courage, da da da. I think I've hit it all. Oh, be sure that you're in the right setting. Sometimes we're trying to define success in cultures and organizations where it's just not going to happen because there's not a match based on who we are in the company that we're in. Do you know how many schools I've been in as an academic? You know, I've been in about 6 of them, including Sloan here at Boston. I've been at Yale. Those were not the right environments for me. So what looked like a failure on my resume, every 5 years I'm up going somewhere else, turns out, believe it or not, being up in the mountains in New Hampshire turned out to be the right place for a little colored girl at South Bronx, from the South Bronx. Who thought? Who would have thunk? You know, not me. All right? But sometimes it's those unusual places that we would say, there's no way in the world I'm going to go there. It's the place where you can really define success. So think about culture and think about place and think about risk, because it's not always the traditional way that's going to work for us as women. It's going to be off the beaten path oftentimes. And Lauren, you're a great little young example of it. I just love it. So that's my 2 minutes.
Love it. Thank you. Shalice, do you want to offer some tips?
I think to echo what Mark said, I think passion is a big part of finding success, and I do believe that happiness is part of it. In my duties, I go to every single game that the Patriots play in. I get to go to the Super Bowl, whether they're in it or not. And part of my duties is to write the game story. I know, from the outside, it sounds like this glamorous life. But it's not always like that. When I started out, one of the things that I covered was college ice hockey. And, you know, I want to be a sports writer. Well, covering college ice hockey means that you're in the basement of this old, old arena with 20-year-old kids who have been wearing 7 pairs of socks for about 4 hours. So after the game, when they've taken off their skates, there's a very distinct and not appealing smell. So that's how I started out and having to deal with that sort of stuff. So it's not that glamorous. But anyway, I do have to write game stories after every game. And now, because of the internet and those sorts of things, I actually have to submit a first version of my game story within 5 minutes of a game being over, because they will have it online 15 minutes after the game is over. So I am constantly in a primetime game, forget it. I barely even get to see what's going on, but I have to tell people about it anyway. So, those are fine. You know, that's part of my job. But what I am passionate about is writing feature stories and sharing the stories of these young men and football players in particular, that from the athletes I've been around, they're a different breed of individual. And we all have a story, and everybody has their, you know, the moments that molded them into who they are. Everybody has somebody who told you, you can't do it, or I don't think you'll ever be able to do X, Y, and Z. And everybody has those stories. And I love sharing those stories. And, you know, one of the happiest times I've had in my job in the last couple of years was the Patriots drafted a young man who had just been diagnosed with leukemia right before the NFL draft. So, of course, teams didn't want to risk taking a young man who had just been diagnosed with leukemia. You don't know how quickly he's going to rebound or anything like that. So my boss says that I can go to Texas, where he went to school and where his family is, and, you know, get his story. I got to talk to him, and it was the first time he had ever publicly talked about finding out about his diagnosis. I got to go to his family's house. I flew from Fort Worth to Odessa on this itty-bitty plane, and the Midland Odessa airport is literally like 4 gates. And I drove to his parents' house, and they welcomed me into the house that the player and his 2 brothers and his father had made with their own hands. And they shared their story. And that's really the happiest I've been professionally in a while, because that is exactly what I would do all the time if I could.
That's the heart of Friday Night Lights.
Odessa. It is, right.
But he went to the other one. He didn't go to the more famous one. And I think, you know, be yourself is fantastic, as you guys just learned. I said penis in a room full of people. So that's who I am. What I mean is, it's very hard for me to have a facade. If you're around me for any amount of time, I'm loud, I'm opinionated, I'm half black and half Italian. Those aren't exactly people who are known for decorum and things like that. And the last thing I would say, and this is something that I personally struggle with all the time, is you have to be your own advocate.
Yeah.
I think as women, we either want to apologize for our success or not accept compliments, and if you want to get ahead, you can't wait for somebody else to notice how hard you're working. Sometimes you just have to put yourself out there and say, these are my accomplishments, and be your own advocate and let people know what you've done and those sorts of things.
Thank you. So I'd like to open up for some questions, if anyone has any questions for our panelists. There's a mic right here. Yes, be brave. One of you gets to go. Okay, great.
Hi, my name is Amy, and I graduated from college in May, and I've had a job for 6 months now. And I know, I'm very lucky, very, very lucky. I actually had a question about being my own advocate even before you brought it up, and that's something that I have struggled with personally. It's hard to, as a young woman, to say, I am successful. And I was wondering if you had any of you had any advice for how do I word it without sounding like a bitch.
Safe space.
Oh, God. We are real in here, boy. I tell you.
Great. Who wants to take it?
I mean, there's a few things that come to my mind. I mean,
One sort of exercise you can do is just kind of writing down, kind of like you would when you're making your resume, all the things that you've accomplished in your position to this point, and really looking over those things and thinking to yourself, wow, like, I really am, first of all, valuable to this company. Look at all the things that I've learned, and kind of using that and just looking over those to sort of almost as if you're building the case for your own confidence. I mean, because you've had a job for 6 months, you've probably done more than we could even imagine in those 6 months. So when you really write out those tasks and kind of do that exercise, hopefully that can kind of, if nothing else, you have to prove it to yourself first. So, you know, if you can prove it to yourself, then you can hopefully professionally articulate that to someone else. And just remember, you know, it's never a... No situation is a dead end, and there's always an opportunity to say to whoever your supervisor is, you know, can I sit down with you for 5 minutes to talk about, you know, my future in the company or, you know, my professional goals or whatever that they might be, and just always pull the advice card. You know, you want their advice. You know, this is where you want to go. This is where you are now. This is what you've accomplished. How do you get from point A to point B? And the average, we were talking about, you know, Gen Y and millennial traits. There was some job outlook study the other day that showed that people between the ages of 18 and 27 are changing jobs 11 times. That is crazy. 11 times. So, you know, and I know it was said before, if it's, I think you said it, Ella, if it's not a fit somewhere, it's a fit somewhere else. Yes, and if you're at a place that you know, you have that gut feeling that they just don't understand your worth and your true potential, you go on to the next thing. You admit your unhappiness, you recognize the problem, and you change it.
I think that there's a reflex to generally, whenever you go into a job situation, particularly if you're young, to conform. And I would just say, in my own experience, what I've seen people stand out is when you try and be you instead of trying to be them. I mean, if you have a distinct personality or kind of attitude or dress or whatever it is, do it. You know, I mean, you don't feel like. I've just seen so many people try and blend in to a culture when it's really standing out as a personality. And I'm thinking of a particular young woman that worked for us years and years ago, and we had a CEO who was really hierarchical and really old school and, you know, sort of as classic kind of old school corporate culture as you can imagine. And she just, like, jumped every hierarchy, went to his office and said, I want to have a meeting with you. And he was so stunned that this, you know, intern or first-year associate did that, that he had the meeting. And, you know, next thing we know, she's, you know, a VP. you know, don't call me up when you get fired for...
Thank you. Can we get the next question? We have just a couple of minutes left, so we'll try to take them all.
Good morning. Thank you all for speaking today. My name is Caitlin Clark, and I had a quick question. Mark, I guess this is directed at you because of your uncle's story, but I'm sure any of the panelists can chime in. So typically, whether it's your personal or professional life, you know, you're going along, and you may be feeling like you should make a move, but the issue is we never know when it's the right time. So my question for you really is, how do you know when it's the right time? Like, does something have to happen? Is it something in your stomach? What advice would you give to sort of help us be able to figure that out if we're trying to make moves in our personal or professional lives?
Well, I can have my uncle give you a call. Which he does that to me all the time. He goes, like, every 3 years, he goes, you got enough cars yet? How big's your house? I mean, it's really a question of, you know, it's your own gut feel. Are you comfortable yet uninspired? Are you comfortable yet not passionate about what you're doing? I mean, there's always the checkups, like, well, things are going pretty good, but I'm not really fulfilled or rewarded or happy. And I think that's when he comes back and says, well, if it's comfortable, it's probably wrong. And that's the time to start looking for other options, I think.
Thank you. Can we get the next?
Don't be afraid to look for options within the company as well. Sometimes we think we have to leave, but look within, too. I mean, do a lateral search as well. Sorry.
No, hello, I'm Sadie Burton-Goss, Chief Diversity Officer for Babson College. Yeah. I'm actually here to personally say hello to Ella, the amazing, the wonderful Ella Bell.
Oh,
and quickly, we look at all of you. You are now fully formed, fully powerful, doing all the courageous, bold things. I want to hear, Ella, particularly about the moment when you knew you could actually be exactly who you are. I know the journeys you've taken. I know the challenges and struggles of getting that book published. When they said no, you found Harvard to say yes. I want to know where that power started from.
Ooh, you got me. I think it's knowing, again, who you are. Our first book that I did with Stella Nkomo, we were rejected from our publisher after doing 10 years of research in the Boston area. I was on faculty here at Sloan. It meant that I was going to have to change schools. It meant that, or lose my job. It meant that all this work was going to go down the drain. And it was a very, very, very difficult period for me. I think sometimes you have to learn to sit with your failure. I think at times you've got to allow people to pick you back up. That book sat on my desk for 6 months and did not go anywhere. We decided we were going to cut it up and write chapters and just publish the chapters in different books. And it was a group of friends that came together and with Stella and I took us to dinner at one of their homes, had us to dinner at one of their homes, and just really told us that we could not walk away. Having people in your life that will tell you that you cannot walk away, that you cannot leave, that, you know, this is what you are meant to do, and by all means, you need to do it. And reaching out to Lauren's point, I then contacted a dear colleague who was then at Harvard Business School and said, I need help. And it's hard for women to say, I need help. That's not something that we do really well. And particularly when you're the only one. You know, you're the black woman, and, you know, God forbid if I look incompetent, because then what am I saying? And I think all women go through that, regardless of their race. If you're younger, you really go through it. And it was making that phone call to David Thomas, the great, great advocate, who then turned us over to the Harvard Business School Press, told us we had to rewrite the book, but then published it. I share that story with you to say that, you know, part of it is the willingness to pick yourself back up. You have to pick yourself back up. You cannot take it personally. You cannot say that something is wrong. Do you have to retweak your attitude? Yes. But it doesn't mean that, you know, your work is not worthy or you are not worthy. It's not interpreting it as if there's something wrong with you. It's examining, what do I need to do differently? But it also means that you pick yourself back up and you believe you have something bigger than you in your life. And that has just been, you know, I'm incredibly, incredibly blessed. And it's not luck. It's not luck, and it's doing the work, but it's having all those pieces come together in a synchrony that you cannot imagine, because that's what faith is all about. Does that make sense? Yeah. You called me on it, girl. I'm going to get you. Good to see you, Sue.
Unfortunately, we're out of time, but I want to end the session with just a little quote, and we'll be up. Some of us will be up here to answer questions. Maya Angelou said that success is liking yourself, liking what you do, and liking how you do it. And what matters isn't how you define success, it's that you define success on your own terms. And hopefully we'll have a great community of support here at the conference today to start doing it. So thank you all so much for coming.